Dun 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 dun! Here's a story of a lovely lady. I forgot the rest of the song, but my point is that we've got stories to tell.
Ray Ray is fundamental, number one podcast from the get-go. Yeah. And since you're listening, you got good sense, so let me break it down on this instrumental. It's basketball and all its essences. It's full of pop culture references.
Okay.
Point guards to stretch fours and fives, the last Buffy episode. Despite surviving, never mind, let me get on track. Houston had a good run and a team was stacked. We had plans for the T-Wolves, y'all remember? Yeah. Quick question in sync, who's your favorite member? Oops, I did it again. Hold up, wait, best team on the court, probably Golden State.
Yeah.
Curry and them, yeah, they out this world, but ask Ray's top five, he's saying the Spice Girls.
What's up? You are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 106. Right now, it's October the 25th, 2018, but the interview was recorded the night before, October 24. This is brought to you by RayRay.net. I am Ray Ray. The NBA is back, and it feels like we're in mid-season form already. We have playoff caliber games in the first week of the season. A lot of drama going on. You know what's up with Jimmy Butler. We already had a high-profile fight involving the Lakers and the Rockets. The scoring is way, way up in the stratosphere. Blake Griffin scored 50 points. Stephen Curry scored 51 the night after. We have Luka Doncic and Trae Young. A lot going on in the NBA. So while it feels like we already crowned the champions, at the very least, enjoy the season because we're going to see a lot of interesting things going on in the NBA. And we're going to talk about that in my interview with Myron Fader, who I truly believe is one of the best storytellers in sports media today. I remember a lot of her work from the Orange County Register, but now you can find her stories on Bleacher Report. Her writing is amazing, especially in long form, and I want to see more people do long form writing, and we'll talk about it more in that interview. I feel kind of bad on talking about NBA, even though, yeah, it's kind of my wheelhouse, but we do have the World Series going on. Red Sox are up on the Dodgers 2-0 as we speak. Games resume on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, if Sunday's necessary, really, because, again, Red Sox are up 2-0. Hopefully, we can talk about the championship before it is over. We shall see. But in the meantime, let me remind you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and other podcasts if you prefer, really, Android, Anchor, whatever. You can subscribe to that, Stitcher as well. Follow me on Twitter at the Nolik Pass and follow the podcast Twitter at RayRayIsFun. I think that's about it. I'm not going to waste any more time. Here's Myron Fader after this promo.
Hey, it's Sarah Spain from ESPN, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 106. My guest. You've seen her work on Bleacher Report. She's also written for the Orange County Register, ESPNW.com, Sports Illustrated, Slam Magazine. Chances are you've seen her work anywhere that you read sports. One of the best storytellers in sports media today. Her name is Myron Fader. I hope I said that right.
You did. Okay. You did. Thank you.
Okay. So, what's up?
How's it going? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's all good. So, I asked everybody this question. How did you get started in this mess?
Mess. Wow. Yeah. You know what? That's a great word. That's a great, great way to start it. Anyone listening who wants to get into this, do not be discouraged. It is not a mess. It is great. It is rewarding stuff. You will love this. Women, we need you. Another conversation for another time. I love sports writing because it really combined my two, you know, biggest passions in life, which was writing and basketball. I didn't really identify as a writer for most of my life. It was really a basketball player. Everyone knew me as a basketball player. I started in elementary school, and I just really just fell in love with it. I knew basketball was, you know, who I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, and I pretty much spent, like, every waking moment playing basketball, trying to get better. And I ended up playing my first year in college at Lewis and Clark College, but decided to really pivot and move towards writing because it was something that I had done this entire time, but it was like a private thing that I did. Mm-hmm. you know, writing was a private joy for me. And so I decided that I wanted to kind of combine those two passions. And in college, I transferred to Occidental, and I started freelancing for Slam, SB Nation, interned with the Clippers, the Sparks, ABC Sports. And then I graduated and I went to the OC Register for about, you know, just over 4 years. And at the same time, I was freelancing for ESPN and Bleacher Report. And fortunately, I've been hired by Bleacher Report since then. So really excited to be a long-form writer in this day and age, this quote-unquote mess, as you said. So that's kind of the summary of my journey.
We talked privately about long-form writing, and, you know, I enjoy your long-form writing. And you're right, it's a lost art. So what is it about people that don't like long-form writing anymore? Do you think it's too long for them? They don't have any attention span anymore? They want to get to the ending immediately, that sort of thing?
Well, I don't know what's wrong with those people, because long-form is amazing. I think it's a variety of factors. I think that, you know, we as a culture, we've told ourselves that we don't have the attention span. We've dumbed ourselves down to the point where we expect immediate gratification. And, you know, some things just cannot be displayed in a short article. Some things are more complex. Teams are complex. People are complex. Offenses are complex. You know, some deserve a longer treatment. I think that, you know, right now this industry is going through a lot in terms of how it's presenting words and how it's, you know, monetizing words. But, you know, I would just really like to reiterate, long form is so valuable. And I think that when you read a long form, especially about a player that you're interested in, or a player that you may not have been interested in, but the story made you interested in them, you don't say to yourself, you know, I've wasted my time on this. You want to come away from a long form really knowing something about the athlete. And I just feel like it enhances the overall fan experience of, you know, why people watch sports. They don't always understand the intricacies of, you know, flex offense or a back screen. And, but they do want to know the storylines. They do want to know the drama. And so I think features plays a huge role in that.
Yeah. And don't you think that people would want to learn more about the person, about the story, instead of just like, oh, I'll just put this here and then the end. Like,
totally.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about some of your stories here. And you recently wrote about Brandon Ingram.
Yes.
Obviously, these athletes...
Pretty brawl.
Yeah. Obviously, these athletes want to be great. Of course they do, right? But the impression I got from the story is that while he's quiet, he's obviously hardworking, but he's also critical of himself to a fault and obsessed, like really obsessed with becoming great. Is that your takeaway from it?
Definitely. That's a huge theme in the piece. I think Brandon Ingram, like a lot of young players, have huge aspirations. But, you know, what comes with youth and ambition is also frustration and struggle. Yeah. You see the people you want to be like, and you know you're not quite there. And I think that, you know, this is such a young league. The NBA is a young league, but, you know, few people really talk about the struggle in that. And I think that he is a perfectionist. He is somebody that can do really, really well, like in the first scene when he was playing against LeBron, although LeBron obviously torched him because he's LeBron.
Yeah.
You know, Ingram's teammates thought that he did great, but Ingram was very upset with himself because he has a higher standard. So I think it's about managing it. You know, there's different levels of perfectionism. I think Brandon's he probably has the highest level of perfectionism like I've ever seen from an athlete. He even skipped his senior prom to do a workout.
Yeah.
But I also think it's purposeful. I think you know, greatness is not always bright lights and you know, celebration and success. It's very much a hard work rooted in struggle.
Yeah, we can all relate to that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, like, definitely.
Yeah, because greatness doesn't come within like, oh, you're born with it or whatever. I mean, although some people I guess can be born with it. But seriously, like you work hard in the gym every night, you skip birthdays, you skip prom as you mentioned. You skip other events basically, and it's like it comes in a culmination of all of this before you can become great. The one quote that sticks out to me was, "I don't think I've ever been on the floor comfortable." And to me, he sees himself as a work in progress. He feels challenged. He's still trying to figure it out. And to me, that feels encouraging for a young player like Brandon.
It is very encouraging. I think I'm really glad you picked up on the comfortability, because that was the central tension of the piece, being comfortable or not being comfortable. How can you be comfortable? The Lakers' success hinges on him being comfortable. I think that, you know, he's, like I said in the piece, he's in the middle of a metamorphosis. And being in the middle of a metamorphosis is frustrating because like all of us, we want to be finished with the process. We want to be great and we just want to be at the end result. But you spend actually so much more time evolving, adapting, searching, working than you actually do the finished product. And I think what Ingram will probably find, which a lot of humans can relate to, is there's never a point where you're like, oh, I made it. I'm great now. Everything's good. I don't have to work anymore. You never quite make it. Even if he does do this breakthrough that we're all kind of counting on, I'm not sure he'll ever reach that point where he's satisfied. And I think you bringing up those earlier themes about, you know, I think we can all relate to this is so true. And I think that's an example of the power of storytelling. Like, a lot of people can relate to this article, even if they've never picked up a ball. You know, we all struggle with perfectionism and wondering whether we measure up or not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to get a little personal here, but like over the last year or so, last year, I had a car accident that led to, anxiety, hypertension, heart attack. I went through all those things. And, you know, at some point it's like, how the heck am I ever going to get through this? Right. And once I was cleared, like all I did was just go to the gym. I'm sure you've probably seen those tweets where all I put is like day 5 in the gym, day 6, right. Day 7. I mean, it's frustrating to just like go through it. Like, who wants to exercise every day, right? But, but I felt like I had to just so I can get to that point where I can be myself again, you know. And it's a challenge, but you know, it's the journey that helps you get stronger, and you know, it helps you get to the end result that you want. And hopefully, Brandon Ingram gets to that point. Did that surprise you though when Brandon went out there and started throwing hands against James Harden and Chris Paul?
Oh, yes, it did. So I got like 20 different text messages from people like, did you spike Ingram's drink is what my uncle texted me? And I was like, I cannot with you right now.
Yeah.
Nobody was more surprised than me, because it's like the story as it, you know, people know, says that his nickname is Tiny Dog. And right. So the whole story is about, like, he's so quiet, his voice is barely audible, and then he does this like epic shove and then just like throws a couple in there, and all I can think of is he must have so much adrenaline happening right now that it just happened all at once. I don't think he was like, oh, I'm gonna get into this fight, I'm gonna do this. But I, you know, I do think that although he's silent, he's one of those quiet people that's like, if you push me, you know, I could go off. And I think that a lot of quiet people are like that. But I definitely was surprised. Like, I have no comment, no take on Twitter for this one.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, you know, everyone gets frustrated. And to a point, you know, they'll break, right? So that must have been their breaking point. And he did feel remorse about it afterwards. So, you know, I mean, it just happens sometimes, right? You just get to that point where you snap, and then it's all back to your normal again and quiet and your Tiny Dog again, so.
I mean, I also think that Tiny Dog is, like, the consummate teammate. He's very well-liked, and I think that, you know, sometimes when you're involved in such a situation, it sort of, it shows your teammates that you're, you know, down for the cause, whatever that means. I saw a lot of support for Brandon in that moment. But, you know, who knows? I'm not in his head. I don't know what he thinks. But I do know that part of what he's going through this season is proving himself, to his teammates, to everyone. And, you know, sometimes you're going to have kind of like off or on the court moments like this that, you know, are really as much a part of it as what he does on the court.
I mean, it also shows off his selflessness, basically, that he's going to stick up for his teammates as well. That was also a theme in your column as well, where people are saying that he could be too unselfish and he's too much of a team player. So, you know, being part of that fracas right there kind of proves that he is one of the guys, right?
He definitely is. I think that people respect him. I think he's a guy in the locker room that people respect. He'll often, the quote didn't make it, but Larry Nance Jr. was saying that, like, if when he was injured in preseason, Brandon was the first person to be like, it'll be okay, you got this. And, you know, for somebody that doesn't speak up a lot, players like that, when they do speak up, it's very meaningful, because they know that you're not just saying something to say something. So I think, you know, there were a lot of teammates that I talked to of Ingram's from college or high school that didn't make the piece, but a lot of them reiterated that theme. Like, Brandon's the kind of guy that you want in the locker room. He's going to have your back.
Yeah, very good job on that piece, and it really makes me root for him as a Lakers fan as well. So, great job on
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so on to another couple stories that I actually praised you about recently was you ending up in Lithuania covering the Paul family. And I'm just kind of like,
what is that about?
I'm just kind of like, whoa, what's she doing there?
It's a great question.
Yeah. So, yeah, how did you end up there?
Yeah. How did I end up there? Well, first, I have to give a huge thank you to Bleacher Report, Christina Tapper, Matt Sullivan. They really believed in me and asked me to do this. So I was not full-time at Bleacher at that point. I had just left the OC Register, and I was looking for my next full-time move, and I was a full-time freelancer at that point for ESPN and Bleacher Report. And I had already profiled Lonzo Ball earlier in the season, and so, you know, Christina and Matt approached me and was like, you know, we really want you to do this. And it was an amazing opportunity. You know, they took a chance on me instead of somebody on staff. And I'm just forever grateful for them for this opportunity. That's something that doesn't really happen in, you know, 2018. I was 26 at the time. Yeah, I just turned 27. That just doesn't happen. So I went over there. I was going to profile LaMelo Ball. And it was supposed to be a story about this fun, young, you know, 16-year-old next in line to take the Ball family throne, and it actually turned into a story about a family on the brinks of, like, Nightmare on Christmas kind of atmosphere and just everything going down the tubes and everyone looking very miserable. And so, you know, what do you do with a family that's basically tipping the scales in their son's favor so that he'll look good, and what is the effect on him and the rest of the people involved?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and How did the Ball family, how were they for the most part, though, when you interacted with them?
Well, so we had some talks with them prior to me going there, and they basically said, yeah, like, you know, she's totally welcome to interview us, and we'll just figure it out when we get there. So at least I had some initial contact with them. Mm-hmm. Then I got there and interviewed LeVar on the second day, which was huge. Everything was going really well. And then on the third day, the story came out from a different outlet that basically had LeVar saying that Luke Walton was a bad coach and just a lot of, remember that?
Yeah.
And and so then the Ball family was like, we're not going to talk to you. We're not going to talk to anyone ever again. You should just go home. And I was not going to go home. Luckily, I had editors that believed in me and believed in the reporting that I was doing on the ground, which was not giving up, sneaking into practice. definitely terrified Lithuanian authorities were going to kick me out. And, you know, I was going through the whole thing in my head, like, what if I end up in Lithuanian jail? Like, I was just picturing, like, Christina and Matt on the phone trying to bail me out. It was just, my anxiety was on 10. So I just kept at it and kept at it. And if they weren't going to give me access to Melo, which they never did, I found access to everyone else. So I interviewed the team, the coaches. I didn't have a translator, but I found a guy who spoke English and I befriended him. And then I asked him to help me translate. And I just went to different parts of the tiny town and literally talked to everyone I could. Mm-hmm. I would just say, you know, do you speak English? I'm a writer. And then most of them be like, no. And so I made do with what I had. But yeah, I think the family really was surprised that I was there for over 3 weeks. They did not take to it kindly as it went on because every other reporter went home. So I just looked at it as a great challenge to help me improve as a writer and a reporter.
3 weeks?
Yes.
That's a long time. Have you ever been out of the States before?
Not like that, not by myself. And this was very new to me. I didn't have a winter, this was my first real winter coat, and I just am not a traveler like that. I was coming from newspapers, so I wasn't on the national scene like that. So this was such a big first for so many different reasons, and I really grew as a person. You know, during it, I couldn't, it's hard to appreciate when you're in the moment. I was really just trying to follow this family wherever they went. Like when they went to breakfast, I would study, you know, are they eating chocolate croissants right now? Like, it was very creepy, but not illegal.
Right.
And and so I couldn't really focus in the moment of how, what a big deal it was till I got home. And I was like, whoa, you know, I did that. So very grateful for the opportunity.
Great, great job on that. And one more thing. Would you ever go back to Lithuania?
If there was a sequel, I would be there in a heartbeat, but nobody will talk to me from either Lithuania or Ball family.
Hey, it's Jess Kleinschmidt from MLB.com's Cut 4, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
Another story that I read, and it was heartbreaking to say the least, but the story about James Ransom, who died very young, 13 years old, I believe.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, because I was such a huge NFL fan for many, many, many years, and I've kind of, like, slowed down the last 5 years because of this kind of stuff. So, does this make you confident about like where football is going, or do you think football should just be, I don't know, taken out altogether because of the dangers of the sport?
I think it's very hard to say. I think that there's clear science out there that shows the dangers of it. I think that it's going to be a long time until football goes away because there's just too much money involved.
Right.
And I think that, I think for this story in particular, you know, as a writer, you want to write about things that other people aren't writing about. You want to approach a very of the moment topic differently. And I think that a lot of people are focused on where the NFL is going and what's going to happen with football. Is it over? But not a lot of people are talking about how, you know, there are players from like ages 5 through 13 playing tackle for years and getting injured and having these concussions and dying, quite frankly. And we're not talking about Pop Warner as an entity in the way that we're talking about the NFL. So, you know, I really just kind of wanted to jump into the conversation from a different vantage point, because you can't appreciate what this is unless you have a human story. I think that you can read stats and you can read numbers and you can read reports and studies, but I think it needs to be complemented by, you know, what is the human toll of what's happening? So I think the story was my way of trying to kind of marry the science and the human together.
And the thing is, like, we've seen so much evidence of football players committing suicide after they're done playing because of so many blows to the head, and it's terrifying.
It is terrifying. I think that even just one concussion increases your risk for suicide. And so there are friends, and not even just friends, there are people like just that I don't know that emailed me that were like, holy crap, I had a concussion doing this. Maybe not even sports related. And they're like, I've been dealing with anxiety or depression. Do you think it's linked? And I think this article was very terrifying for a lot of people because, you know, there's a lot of people who did not die from whatever they went through, but they're walking through the world with different symptoms and they don't know where they're coming from. And I think a lot of people reached out to me and said, I kind of feel like they might be from when I played football. And that's the disturbing thing, is like, are things that happen to you from ages 8 through 13 affecting you at 22? Everyone's different. You know, you can play the game of football and not have these issues. You know, there's stats obviously that say that, like, just because you play football does not mean you will develop mental illness. But it does increase the risk for behavioral problems when you play before age 12, which can include depression and anxiety. So, you know, I think this is a really huge issue. And we have come so far in the past 5 years in terms of our research, but we haven't even scratched the surface. I mean, it's really depressing to think of all that we don't know. I think this conversation will be radically different in 5 years. But I just know that, like, people are dying and we're not talking about it. Like, children are dying and we're not talking about it. So, you know, hopefully it shed light on this issue.
Kind of in the same vein, I don't know if you watch professional wrestling, but back as late as, I believe, the late 2000s, they were hitting people in the head with chairs. Like, that's terrifying now when you think about it. Like, you look back at the 90s and 2000s, like, they were hitting each other in the head, like, with no tomorrow. Like, it's, like, they're just swinging away. And now they banned that because of what we learned about CTE. So, hopefully in the future, you mentioned 5 years from now, maybe hopefully even next year, as soon as possible, you know, let's learn more about this thing, you know, because it's scary as the days go on, so.
I mean, I think that's an important point to make, is that it's not just football. It's just football is the most obvious form of what's happening. But, you know, this is a very big issue within MMA that is not always talked about. And MMA has had a lot of suicides in the last couple of years. I was following a couple in Orange County when I was writing for the Register. Women's soccer has an incredibly high concussion rate. Water polo has a very high concussion rate. So, you know, it's just interesting. I think the more narratives are out there, the just, I don't know. It's important to write about things of the moment, and this is one of the biggest topics that we're grappling with right now.
Yeah, even boxing, where someone just like punches them in the face and they never wake up. Like, yeah, we've seen those issues, and the ones that did the deed end up becoming depressed as well because of what they did.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we gotta keep it in perspective here that you know, there's a human element to everything here. Instead of just like, oh, stats, my team wins. I don't care if your team loses and they die or whatever. You know, so,
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, that's why I went into features and storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to tell stories that go beyond the box score. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to matter to me so much if I had a bad game and I was not shooting well, or, you know, if my team lost, I would just be so depressed. I'd be so down. I would just like cry like for hours. And now that I'm older, it doesn't affect me in that way. And I just realized, you know, life is so much bigger than basketball, and I want to tell real narratives, real stories that go beyond that. And that's why when we talked about long form earlier, I'm like, you know, it really depresses me when people talk about cutting features or long form, mm-hmm. because there's so much opportunity to tell stories that transcend sports fans. You know, I think that a great story can be read and enjoyed by anyone. You should be able to read a story whether you know much about sports or not. Like, a good story is a good story.
Yeah. And personally, it's really discouraging when people are like, well, people are pivoting to video. They're there to watch videos. Like, no, dude, people want to read too, you know. I open a website, I expect to read something, you know, whether it's long form or short form. I just want to read a story instead of, like, watching a video for 3-4 minutes.
Well, and it's, why does it have to be one or the other? I think, like, there's a future out there that somehow will blend all of these aspects together. And I'm not anti-video. I'm not anti-podcast. I'm not anti-any of those things. I'm just like, let's find a way to do storytelling with all these wonderful mediums. I love podcasts. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that I just get frustrated when people say, like, you know, about writer, oh, like, you only write, as if writing is an easy thing.
Yeah.
You know, we just like bang our heads against the laptop every day with blood coming out of our fingertips and NBD, you know, so it's just, you know, I wish there was more respect on how hard it is. You know, long form writers, we agonize over every sentence. We want, you know, it's not just like the facts and the reporting and the interviewing. It's like, what's my cadence like? How am I presenting this? What about the structure? I mean, I could riff on this forever. There's so much beauty in long form. So thanks for shedding light on it.
Yeah, I mean, because I've done a few in the past too. And then, you know, I'm sure you've gotten this before, but people have told, fans, I'm sure, have told you, it's like, I can do what you do. It's easy. Like, yeah. You do all the research then. You do all the writing. You do all the correct grammar and writing, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's a reporting issue too. I mean, I think people don't understand, like, to be a feature writer, you got to be a reporter. You have to know how to glean details about mm-hmm. personality, and, you know, I mean, that is a very hard thing to get people to open up. I can't think of any people more guarded than professional athletes.
Yeah.
I just, you know, besides, like, you know, celebrities and in other realms. But seriously, you know, when you write about people at this level, it's tremendously difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And people, like, again, we have to keep putting it out there that long-form writing really tells a good story, much more than what you can in, like, a 300-word column, right? Which is what most people do these days. It's like, so-and-so says something about social media, and then, boom, that's the end. Like,
can we
shed more details on it. Go ahead, sorry.
Totally. And, yeah, and I was just going to say, you know, if done right, I don't want to read 12,000 words on something that is just not important. You know, I think there's a sweet spot between, you know, not giving every detail, but giving the details that matter. Yeah. Not doing an 8,000 word, but a really, really succinct 5,000.
Yeah, yeah. Good writers all do that, and you're one of them right now, so.
I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Quick hits about the NBA. Craziest opening week you can ever remember? Or... Because I feel like it is.
It's just a lot. And it's weird for me because I don't cover the NBA exclusively. And like, I do all sports because I just think it's more fun that way. But, man, when I'm watching these NBA beat writers, just it's really crazy. It's really crazy because there's so much going on. I live in L.A., so I see it. I hear it. But really crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there's like a story every day. Scores are up the stratosphere now. There's just a lot. Like Jimmy Butler, Blake Griffin getting 50 points. I mean, there's just a lot of things going on. LeBron and the Lakers, Golden State Warriors versus Utah Jazz. Like, every day felt like an event, basically.
And, it is an event. Sorry to interrupt you. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, we basically got, like, a playoff caliber game on, like, day three of the NBA season. It's like, what's going on here, you know? So, yeah, it's a mess, but we like this mess.
We like this mess a lot.
Yeah, we do. So, anything in the NBA that stands out to you right now, or you're just enjoying the chaos?
I'm definitely enjoying the chaos. I'm really curious about the Celtics. Kind of been wanting to write something for a while. We'll see.
Yeah.
I definitely think what's happening with the East is interesting. I mean, as somebody on the West Coast, I don't know. I think the NBA is really, truly the most popular sports league right now. I'm fascinated in the ways that this league has understood how to capture culture and social media. I think it's, and it's just like global. I'm really fascinated on what it's doing. And I don't know. The way people talk about it on Twitter, it's with a different level than I've seen for, you know, anything else.
It's a good marriage, and the NBA is pretty loose with it because, like, they allow people to have people record clips and whatnot, while the other leagues don't let them do that. They're more right. strict about that. And they embrace the social media. They embrace the chaos. They embrace fans talking to players and vice versa and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's been a good marriage. And, you know, coincidentally, I got on Twitter in late 2008 when Twitter was just becoming a thing. And, yeah, they really integrated beautifully into it. So, as far as the Celtics go, I mentioned on Twitter that they're the only team that hasn't scored 100 points a game. Everyone else has. So that is a pretty curious thing. And they're still trying to integrate Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward back into the mix. So, yeah, very interesting right now, especially since everyone's basically giving them the Eastern Conference at the moment. So
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that they just have so many interesting characters, and just kind of watching them blend together has been interesting for me. I mean, as somebody who grew up like watching the Lakers and having like the Celtics like annihilate us, I believe in 08, was like something that I still think about.
Yeah. Are you still a fan? Because I know it's hard to be a fan when you're a feature reporter.
I'm not a fan. Yeah. I'm not a fan at all. I have my good friends and I have a really great NBA text thread going on, mm-hmm. and I love sending links, and it's, you know, it's great just catching up on everything, mm-hmm. but I'm not a fan, and I can't be. I think sports journalism is going through a really weird phase where everyone's trying to be fans, mm-hmm. And I'm just like more old school. I really believe in, you know, separation of that.
Right, yeah. But once you're, I guess, if you're done writing, whenever that would be, it's like you can turn back into a fan, or you think it'll be a hard transition back into that, or you'll just, like, enjoy the chaos anyway?
I think that I enjoy sport just mm-hmm. in general. Mm-hmm. Like, I enjoy following the storylines and what's going on, but just because I'm in a different space in my life than I was when I was an athlete, it doesn't do what it used to do for me, like, and not in a bad way. It's like, this is gonna sound really like unnecessarily deep, but like when you love something,
yeah,
that changes. The way you love something changes. It doesn't mean you don't love it anymore. It's just I'm not in love with it. I love it. It's like this thing that has driven my whole life, but I'm not in love with it like I was when I was younger, and it was just like everything to me. Like when somebody lost, I would just get so down.
Right.
Or, you know, it's just a different way of approaching things now. I mean, I would be in writing and journalism without sports. I think eventually for me, I do want to write books. I could see myself doing sports and non-sports features mm-hmm. because it's about people. So, you know, I definitely don't want to put myself in the sports box. Right now I love it, and I'm really happy doing sports writing. But you just never know. You just never know. I think being open and being expanding your repertoire and in the kinds of writing that you want to touch is really important right now.
I'm kind of in the same vein as you, because like, while I call myself a Lakers fan, but I want everybody to do well. It's like I don't want them to like wish ill on them. It's like, well, they beat the Lakers. Okay, good. Good luck to them. That's how I see it. And, you know, that's just how I am. Like, why would I want for people to fail? That kind of seems mean, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just want everybody to do well. That's just how I am. And maybe you can call me a super nice guy or whatever, but, you know, I just want everyone to do well. That's all. Like, I don't want them to be like, oh, wow, you're a failure. No. You know?
I mean, I feel that way about, like, media and other sports writers. I never understand when people go at each other. I really just want everyone to win.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, why does, like, there? I feel like there's room for everybody, right? Some way. And in some way, like, the NBA, like, every player wins. At the end, it's still a game, and it's still their job. If they lose 60 games, well, this guy still earned $20 million, and he seems happy with his family, and, you know, that's what counts, right? So that's how it feels with me, at least. I don't know how you feel, but that's how it is for me.
Yeah, I mean, basketball is something that I will mm-hmm. continue to enjoy no matter what I do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it taught me so much, and I can see why everyone loves it. You know?
Yeah.
It's just, there's nothing like it. There's just nothing like it. You know, I didn't want to write about other sports because I was just so in love with basketball. And then when I was able to kind of let that go, I just saw like, wow, there's really universal themes and cool things within all sports, whether that's like water polo or hockey. I did softball for a long time. You know, baseball, football, like there's just so much to be learned from different leagues.
Yeah, I mean, over the past couple of years or so, I've kind of like, when I had past guests here, like, I tried my hand on like, oh, I'll have a baseball guest on here, you know?
Yeah.
Football, I never really did hockey yet because I don't know any other hockey writers as of now, but, you know, at some point I'll probably try it for sure. But yeah, like, you know, in the end, it's all a game. They're all working together for a common goal, and, you know, that's they all have that in common, so, yeah.
I just think what makes a great story is the person and their story.
Yeah.
Like, sports is almost, like, they're just a person that happens to play sports. Once you start looking at athletes like that, it changes your whole view.
Yeah.
Like, I used to get really, really geeked out when I saw, like, NBA stars at first because I was like, oh my God, it's so-and-so.
Uh-huh.
You know, but then I was like, you know, they're just people.
Yeah.
And the more you talk to them and the more you see that they're normal and they're shy and they're worried and they're stressed and they're perfectionist and they're anxious, you're like, whoa. It's not that they're just like us, but it's just like they happen to be people first and athletes second. And that really just changed the way that I cover stories too, because I'm like, you know, I'll never know the person I'm covering. Like, I'll never literally know who they are, just like they'll never know me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can, my goal is to try to get as close as possible to give readers a snapshot of what somebody is like.
Yeah. I became friends with CJ Miles, who plays for Toronto now. And back when I had him as a guest, like a long time ago, you know, obviously my friends are geeked out, like, oh my God, you're talking to an NBA player, right? And then you just get to know him better, and suddenly we're joking over the Niners-Cowboys rivalry, because he's a Cowboys fan, I'm a Niners fan. And, you know, ironically, we're talking about other sports to bond over, and then suddenly we're just, like, friends on Twitter, and then, you know, we're just talking regularly, just like, hey, there's no Jack in the Box in Utah. Like, oh, cool, thanks. You know, so
I know, it's so surprising, right? They're just, like, yeah. Actual.
They're actual people. Who
imagine.
Just, yeah, who just happen to be really, really good at something, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
This is Shay Serrano, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast. I think Ray Ray should change the name of the podcast, but he likes it, so that's what you're listening to.
Wow, we talked a lot, but I appreciate you giving me a lot. I learned a lot definitely in this podcast, so go ahead and pub your work in whatever you want to pub.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on. I spent a lot of time on my website with lots of long-form articles, so if you have some time on a Saturday, I'm just at mirrenfader.com, and then Twitter is at mirrenfader.
Sweet. That's Marin. She works hard. I'm Ray Ray. I just sleep a lot, so thanks.
Thank you so much. Game over,
yeah! Hashtag blame Ray Ray.